Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes, cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in, waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb instead of how your back have you beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. This phone call cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent. Brothers not only dealing with the same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
You know the black freedom movement constitutes your moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless. So we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the blood stained banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
good evening. This is the Dr. Mary Lee Live Show, and this is Dr. Mary Lee. We are so happy you are here tonight. We're excited about the conversation, and we're talking tonight about the police killings of blacks who are experiencing are right in the middle of a mental health crisis. So much of this is happening, and we're kind of discussing around several different incidences, but particularly, you know, this one, a young in the city of Detroit, a young 27-year-old young lady was experiencing a crisis, a mental health crisis. She was a mother of two who the Detroit police say had been violent toward her son and mother during a mental health crisis, was shot and killed by the officers. Now, my understanding at this particular time is that the two officers and his supervisor who were there on the scene and did this have been suspended. My concern is how much more of this we're going to have to endure with in our communities. So and so we're here to talk about it. We're here with, of course, our own medical staff, with Dr. Lowe's and Dr. Moncrief, Dr. Tynes, maybe joining us later. And we also have a special guest attorney who's joining us tonight in this conversation, Attorney Michael Fortner, out of the city of Detroit. And so we're going to ask Attorney Fortner to please tap one on your phone so that we'll know where you are and we can open your line if you are here. Please tap one on your phone so that we can open up your line. Again, we want to thank you for joining us. So we're going to talk about this tonight, and we want to talk about what are some of the things that we can do as a people. We really need to address the issue ourselves. We're going to hear from our psychiatrist, Dr. Long. But before we go to Dr. Lawrence, we want to welcome Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Tynes. If you're here, please tap one of your phones. So we want Dr. Moncrief to say hello, and then we're going to go turn it over into the hands of Dr. Lawrence. Let's get this conversation started. Dr. Moncrief, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good evening to everyone. Again, this is an exciting topic. Living in, growing up in Detroit, these things come very, very close to home. If not her, it could have been me. What are we going to talk about? Tonight, hopefully we'll understand that what happened to the sister here is not just a person with mental illness and the system responding to it. This is another form of racism. Racism itself is a mental illness. So there's more than one person involved here with a mental illness. It's the young lady who got shot with the diagnosis of mental illness, and Dr. Longs would talk some more about that. But the racism should have its own DMS code. That racism is a mental illness that's driving this type of behavior. And so as the conversation progresses, I really want us to look at it from both of those perspectives, not just saying that the police, you know, overreacted and this is something they always do. Say what it is. This is another form of racism, which is another form of mental illness, which is something else that we need to treat. So I'll leave it at that for now.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Attorney Fortner, for joining us tonight. We would like for you to say hello and just give us a little bit about who you are, your background, and what laws you practice. And a little bit about, and I know you know about the case, what you know about the case.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Attorney Michael Fortner. I'm here in Detroit. And, Doctor, I'm a petitioner in the civil rights arena here, fighting on behalf of blacks and brown and other minority people who are regularly, consistently, systematically oppressed by the system. And so that's what I do full-time here and been doing it for over 30 years. And it's not just the police, it's the insurance companies, as you all know, and court system, and it's just it's a regular piece of life in the life of the average black American. Jury suppression and suppression of black jurors, it's in every aspect of black and brown American life.
Thank you.
You want
Thank
me to get into the case itself?
Pardon?
I couldn't hear you, Doc.
I was saying thank you so much for sharing and being here. We want on this talk show, you know, we're just sitting at home in the living room around a coffee table and just talking and just sharing our feelings. We want everyone to feel very, very free to express yourself. So thank you. Dr. Longs, you would let us know who you are and tease. And I know you're quite, versed on what is going on and how. What are we supposed to do here? I mean, this thing continues to happen. This lady was 27 years old, clearly having a mental crisis. Her mother called the police because she had assaulted her own, I think, 6 or 7 year old. She's a mother of two. Now she's gone. She even made the statement I read somewhere. Made the statement, you have a gun. You came here prepared to shoot. She said that. Dr. Long.
Thank you, Dr. Mary Lee. Again, always grateful for the opportunity to share with our listening audience. I want to say hello to my colleagues, Dr. Tynes, Dr. Moncrief, and all the other panelists, Dr. James Cannon, and all the other contributors. I'm very happy that Attorney Michael Fortner agreed to join us tonight. There is another person that may phone in who I believe can give a very interesting perspective in terms of cases like this. So this situation, again, it's not new. If you look at it from the perspective of a family trying to advocate for their loved one. And this loved one, from their perspective, definitely has a crisis. They may not understand what the mental health crisis is, but they know there's something going wrong. So typically, and a lot of the things I'm kind of referencing is based on laws. You know, there's a mental health code in the state of Michigan that sometimes it's kind of overlooked, but when you look at it in more detail, situations like this are part of the mental health code. So let's say this situation, this lady was having a crisis and she calls a, quote, peace officer. And, of course, by the Mental Health Code, a peace officer means the officer of the department of or state police or a law enforcement agency of a county, township, or city or village who is responsible for preventing and detecting crime and enforcing criminal laws in the state. Now, in that description, you know, where does it say that peace officers should or should not be called to homes where someone's having a crisis? You know, the words in that article is talking about crimes. It's not a crime to have mental health issues. But, you know, there's so many parameters of this case. First of all, and this kind of goes back to 2 weeks ago when we had the young man talking about a particular treatment for particular mental health conditions. You know, what was this person's diagnosis? Did the person have a diagnosis? Was this person under treatment? I'll just say, as we talk tonight, community mental health agencies are struggling. A lot of them have been closed. A lot of them had to merge. And even with that being said, there are very few private practitioners who practice in the area of psychiatry and behavioral health who can see individuals on an emergency basis when they can't get an appointment, typically during, you know, on Skype. And so you figure out how can a Skype interview would have helped in this situation. So, So again, the discussion can go so many ways. Just, you know, my perspective is always if there's treatment available, you know, individuals should seek it. Legally, and perhaps Attorney Forty can speak on this, and I'm sure Attorney Russell Smith is on the line too, you know, the whole process of using petitions, I don't know if the family, quote unquote, petitioned this young lady to receive help. And petitioning means you don't expect that a police officer is going to wind up shooting somebody. A petition means you want this person to be hopefully escorted to a facility like Detroit Receiving Crisis Center, where then a physician on call will then certify whatever the family's petition may say, and then the person gets help. The mental health system in Michigan, as everyone knows, since Engler, has been in disarray for decades. That doesn't explain situations like this, because there's the other end in terms of peace officers and their training. And again, this is not new. You remember maybe 20 years ago, there was a young man with a rake in front of his home, and he wouldn't put the rake down, and lo and behold, he gets shot. Well, in that case, there was a Caucasian officer who shot him while African-American officers kind of stood by. So, you know, my perspective in opening up the conversation, I think it varies based on what angle you want to go. My angle is always if you can seek out treatment, but in order to seek out treatment, we've talked a lot on the show regarding where we are as African Americans and even believing that mental health is that, you know, mental health is worth seeking. Because there's still a lot of denial in our community, and that's on top of, institutionalized racism. There's racism in psychiatry, neurologists, racism in all medicine. But when you think about the family who's calling to get some sort of assistance for this loved one, I know they didn't expect for this woman to be dead, you know, with two kids. But, you know, this happens, unfortunately, more than we may want to believe, but it usually doesn't lead into a person's death. But, you know, I'm always a proponent of seeking treatment for individuals. And the access to mental health treatment now is pretty horrible. So that would be my opening statement, and there's some other things I would add later.
Thank you. So clearly, it seems that she had been diagnosed sometime in her life with some form of mental illness. So, who do we call? I mean, if we can't feel comfortable in calling the police, who do we call? And we can talk about that. But her name is Kaizia Miller. And according to this article here, the 27-year-old mother of two died on Myers Road for what her mother called a mental health crisis. Her mother told 911 she was worried she would have to kill her child because she's assaulted her and one of her children. Kaizia Miller, she had her phone going on Facebook Live before she was killed, before the fatal confrontation with the officers. So this is what was heard on Facebook, you know, live. And this is what she said, Miller, Kaizia. She says, y'all came with guns drawn because somebody came to my residence. That's what she said, said Miller. Then the officer said, we don't have any guns on you anymore. Okay. So then Ms. Miller says, y'all don't have guns drawn anymore, but y'all came prepared to shoot, right? So that was recorded on, on Facebook. Why would anyone, including myself, why would I have to be concerned about, I'm calling a, someone in the house calling a peace officer, and that peace officer shows up with his guns drawn. Don't know, the Detroit Police Chief James White, he announced Monday that he suspended two officers and one supervisor in the connection with the police shooting and death of a 21-year-old woman, last week. Chief James White, he said, I have some concerns with the pace in which we moved, and I also have some supervisory concern issues. So, they're suspended until the investigation, while the investigation continues. So, it's hard. It's very, very difficult for me, very difficult, because she was shot. Let's see. Where did I see that? Does anyone know how many times she was shot? It seems like I saw 4 or 5 times. These officers, they take training. They should be able, if they feel that their lives are threatened. This woman didn't have a gun. You can't shoot the leg or the arm or somewhere. You have to shoot to kill. This is so mind-boggling to me. And, we as citizens of this country, I don't care if you're black, white, green, yellow, I don't care what you are. I feel that it's time for us to start demanding, creating change within our own communities. This here is just totally and completely uncalled for. Just uncalled for. The mother called because her daughter had, done something to the child, and she was concerned. I don't even know from these articles, and I probably don't have enough of them to know, I know she didn't have a gun or what type of weapon did she have. So did the officers properly follow the force continuum said, this is what one chief asked, was it close quarters? Were they too close to the individual so the individual was able to get to their own weapon? Why were they fearing? Did they feel their lives were in jeopardy? And what was the experience level of the supervisor that was on the scene? So I'm going to ask Attorney Courtney if you would kind of chime in here and from your area of legal expertise, just kind of address some of this, you know, for us, please.
Absolutely. So let me start off with this right here. What you describe and what I've been hearing is that this young lady was murdered. There's no other way to describe it. Anytime you have multiple police officers with an assortment of weapons at their disposals, and the most deadly of which is a gun, shooting an unarmed woman who, in front of her mother and in front of her child, is murder. She's obviously not a serious threat. and what you have to recognize, doctor, is this: the police have options. As you indicated, they're trained. They have tasers. Tasers are designed to not lead to the loss of life. And so when you have multiple officers making the decision that we're going to execute a person, that's a decision they made. And let me indicate this, just like Dr. Long said earlier. When you see these type of actions that over and over and over and over again, it's in the black community. You don't see situations like this in the white community. And black people aren't the only ones who have mental health issues. They have issues all the time in the white community. They have issues with white citizens in Detroit with mental health issues. But over and over and over again, and it's not just in Detroit, but it's all over the country, where there seems to be it's an allowable exercise of deadly force if it's a black person versus a white person. Just recently, I think you might have heard a colleague of mine uncovered training exercises right here in Farmington Hills, where they're using models and posters and practice dummies with guns to practice shooting, you know. And so you got a police force of white officers, and they're practicing using deadly force on black models and black decoys, and not ducks or
right,
some other type of animal. We're using models of black people to justify killing. And so over and over and over again, these officers have been trained to use force on black citizens. It's being justified. It's being excused. And it's going to continue unless we as a people rise up and hold some people accountable. And the way they typically get around that is the issue I raised earlier, and that's the exclusion of blacks from the jury pool. And so when you don't have blacks on the juries and you don't have black judges, and you have white officers patrolling your black communities or your minority communities, and you have black officers who are being supervised by white officers who say it's okay, you got a recipe for a disaster, and that's what you have over and over and over again all over the country. And so discussions like this are key, because the citizens have got to be woken up to the point where they're ready to take some action and hold some accountability or hold some feet to the fire as pertains to actions like this. Mm-hmm. And not just the officer supervisors, the police chief. And then you got to start looking at these juries, because over and over again, we're seeing that these people, when they do these things, they're exonerated. I mean, George Floyd was a rare example of where a black person was killed by white officers or any officers. We saw what happened down there with the young lady down in Louisiana, I think it was, who the prosecutor down there thought that it was justifiable use of force, and she was in her own home and completely innocent. And so that's the double standard we're dealing with, and talk shows like yours where we're raising these issues and we're asking questions and we're demanding the respect that we didn't get from the perspective of our ancestors, you know, and our forefathers and our grandparents, because you know this is not brand new stuff. It's just stuff that's due to social media. We are more aware of than we were. And, you know, and the mentality and the attitude is still the same. Quite frankly, we can do it. We can get away with it as long as the person is black. You know, I mean, we got an unarmed woman.
Three officers shot a total of four shots inside the home. Police said the woman's 7-year-old son had also been struck and was bleeding. The 27-year-old woman had a baseball bat, knife, and a gun. That's what the police said. The mother told police she feared she would have to kill her daughter. The mother also said that her daughter has schizophrenia.
Well, what we didn't hear is the mother said anything about she felt like her life was in danger or the kid's life was in danger. What the mother said was, "I called the police so I don't have to hurt my daughter." That's what that report says. There's anything about get over here, my daughter's about to kill me, or she's about to kill her child. She probably whooped the child or something like that. Mm-hmm. The mother didn't approve of it, but none of that should lead to this officer. This young unarmed woman getting shot four or five times in front of her family.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, one of the officers, chief of police said priority, you know, even in these situations, is to be sure that children are safe. And it didn't appear that was happening. You know, shooting was just taking place. And so, this is a lot for me. This is a lot. And to digest, and clearly, you know, she has a crisis. She was in a mental health crisis. I mean, should the police officers come out with help? You know, I can remember some years ago, and I don't recall whether or not, and I don't know if anybody here is on the line who can recall when there would be police standoffs, and even with guns, how there would be some, I don't know if it were the officers or there would be others there, perhaps maybe social workers or others there talking, you know, to the individual to try to persuade the individual to like, you know, relinquish the gun, come out. You know, I remember stories like that, you know, news stories when in certain incidences, even, you know, while I was growing up, it wasn't like go in and rush in and start shooting. What happened with that, Michael, Attorney Portney? Mr. Fortney, did we lose you?
No, I'm still here, Doctor.
Okay.
I'm still here, Doctor. Go ahead. I'll defer to Dr. Laws, and then I'll come back.
You know,
as I was
listening to the conversation, again, a lot of thoughts go through my mind. But Dr. Lee, you're right. You do recall when there was a crisis team sent to different situations like this. And I do believe they're trying to restructure those crisis teams. But, again, it goes back to the accessibility of mental health services. A lot of those crisis teams were a partnership with a community mental health agency who had a direct connection with that family, including a patient like this. It would require a therapist along with a case manager. And in essence, it would be an extension of the physician and the whole treatment team. But unfortunately, with lack of funding, a lot of those agencies have been put out of business and just don't exist. But even with that being said, you know, police officers are supposed to be getting more training in terms of how to handle situations like this. But in that training, I don't think there's any, you know, even in my training as a physician to keep certain contracts going with the county, you have to do certain CMEs and things like that in terms of that looks at bias, cultural awareness, and things like that. I know they try to do that with the police departments, but how do you really focus on that when, you know, on one hand, it's hard to establish a police force based on their lack of pay and things like that. So in order to focus on the innate bias with officers who don't live here, that's a hard task. You know, the other thing I was thinking about when you mentioned, you know, how aware are these officers and even supervisors that, you know, when they arrived at that house, did they know there were kids there? And it kind of takes me back to a case that occurred in Detroit that probably got even more, well, definitely got more headlines. It was the case where they were shooting the first 48 in Detroit, and when these officers along with a SWAT team rushed in, and of all the officers of the SWAT team, you know, who were highly trained, this one officer fired his weapon and killed his little 7-year-old. But again, as Attorney Porter said, you know, this happened on the Lower East Side of the city of Detroit, all black neighborhood being patrolled by, I don't know what the demographics are of the police department now, but I would say with some of the squads they have now, including what's called the Jump Out Boys, which is a rival of Stress back in the 70s, most of these guys, I don't see, they don't look like myself. So how do you tackle that innate bias? You know, so now we're looking at a project where our nonprofit tried to view some years ago in terms of what does it take to meet the criteria of an officer. And to this day, we still don't know. I know a lot of the testing and things they do now are kind of antiquated. But, you know, I don't think the answer is that, you know, right now we're trying to understand how this happens. Well, I don't know if we'll ever understand it because we can't get in the minds of some of these officers. I believe a lot of them are just too young. You're not the seasoned officers that I remember growing up with that you can go to Detroit PAL and, you know, the same officer was the head of your baseball team and you knew them coming to your school as blue pigs and all these sort of things. It's just not the same. And I actually think a lot of these officers have so much fear and anxiety that, you know, how can you be afraid and you actually have a weapon when you're pulling out of somebody? Mm-hmm. That's a major issue. But the fact that it's always black folks, you can't deny the bias in there and the whole dynamics of racism. But as far as the treatment perspective, there's just not enough money and funding for mental health. You know, we just had the midterm elections. I don't remember anything about mental health, behavioral health, health in general being satisfied by any of these people who are going to be in office now. So, I mean, it's unfortunate, it's a difficult task, but I would be interested, it would would be interested to find out if this this lady had any connections to some form of a mental health agency. It really saddens me to kind of conclude that probably not. Or if she did, how is what's going to be typical noncompliance going to be addressed? And that kind of goes back to our conversation 2 weeks ago, where you expect a certain degree of noncompliance, particularly if a person is young, and then how do you handle that? So, I mean, there's a lot of questions that need to be asked.
So Dr. Lee, her mother did say, oh, go ahead, Dr. Moncrief.
Yes, I was going to
her mother
before,
did say she'd been diagnosed with schizophrenia, so, you know, whether there was treatment or not, you know, that's what we don't know. But we do know that the insurances have, where things stand now with the insurance companies, it makes it difficult.
I was just going to try to weigh in before Attorney Fortner responded also. When I bring up the issue of racism as being a mental illness and not wanting to just talk about the schizophrenic mental illness diagnosis that Ms. Miller had, racism is a taught activity. It's a learned activity. It's nothing that you are born with. Racism, and Attorney Fortner gave us an example, it's being taught in the academies. When you put in dummies that are supposed to be black and you're training your police officers to shoot blacks, that's a learned activity. That's a learned activity. And once you've got that ingrained in you, that's your response. And until we start looking at, not saying white officers are racist, not saying black officers cannot be racist, once we start looking at, we are teaching these guys to be racist in their responses. We are teaching them to shoot black people like they're animals, okay? When we look at this at the story, the more information that we get, we see that the police have to find ways to justify the actions of the police officers that day. Instead of looking at just the actions and justifying that day, look at this training that they're getting. Look at what they're being taught. A child can tell you there's something wrong with the way that the police are being taught. And what they're being taught, they apply that. And when they apply that, they apply it more so to people in the black community. Dr. Long brought up the point that what the police used to look like in his day when he was growing up. In his day when he was growing up, the police were required to have a residency in the city of Detroit. Otherwise, you could not be a police officer in the city of Detroit. Most of the city of Detroit's population was, and so you had to have more black officers. And you had fewer police shooting blacks at that time. Racism has led to the law being changed so that blacks, police officers do not have to be residents of the city of Detroit anymore. But they're still being trained to shoot blacks. This is racism. You know, you can say, well, she was going to get a gun. She was going to get a knife. She didn't have three arms. She didn't have three arms. She had time to have conversation. Her mother and her grandmother were in the house when the 911 call was made with the two kids. They got opportunity to leave, but the two kids were still in the house with the mother. Who had the gun? Was it the mother who said, "I don't want to kill my child"? Was she the one who left the gun there? Remember, this is a 27-year-old lady with a bat, with mental illness, having time to do all this social media information and exchange with these officers. This thing didn't just happen in a split second. They entered the home. The police officers entered the home. It's not like she was shot on the street. They entered the home and they shot her. This is what they were trained to do. They shot. This is what they were trained to do. So I just wanted to bring this up that there, this racism is a taught activity, and blacks are taught to respond to this mental illness to the point where all of us who are black, I don't care if you're talking about descendants of the slave Africans, if you're talking about people who just came over 2 weeks ago, once you get here, all of us are victims of racism, this post-traumatic slavery syndrome. All of us suffer from stress, depression, anxiety. This young lady, schizophrenia, manic depressive. We got violent behaviors. We have acting out disorders. We suffer from and victims from this racism. And the same system judges us like dogs in the street and shoots us, or they arrest us, and we are not benefactors of our peers being in charge of our trials. We are being tried by people who do not look like us. The judges very rarely look like us. The juries, when it comes to major cases, never look like us. That's the part of the systemic racism that we need to deal with. And when we get down to the issue of our mental illness, we need to look at not only how we respond in terms of emergencies like what happened to Mrs. Miller that night, but what happens routinely? Everybody doesn't get shot, but what do we do for our mental health services routinely? We need to look at those things, and we need to see how we can empower ourselves to set up systems, like Dr. Longs was trying to say, that opens up communications so that we don't have to get to the point where we have these emergencies where we have to call the people who are going to shoot us to try to save us.
Mm-hmm. And naturally, so if your targets, you know, you're programming an individual's mind. So if, you know, using black images as targets. So this article here says police chief, and this was June of 22. So this is recent. Police chief admits shooting practice targets are images of black men. That police chief asks for forgiveness. The targets were discovered. Now listen to this. This is crazy. The targets were discovered during a Boy Scout troops recent tour of the Farmington Hills Police Department headquarters in suburb of Detroit. The police, I mean, children, Boy Scouts, they discovered it on the tour, said something about it, apparently. The chief of police in a suburb of Detroit has admitted that his department used only paper targets of black men at their shooting range. The targets were discovered during a Boy Scout troop's recent tour of the Farmington Hills Police Department headquarters, according to WXYZ-TV. Police Chief Jeff King is asking the public for forgiveness. I'm totally and completely speechless. This, they're trained, just as you said, to shoot. They're teaching them to shoot blacks. Attorney Fortney.
I'm here.
What's your thoughts?
All right, so here's what you got. Everything that you all are saying is 100% true. Let's start off with this. I disagree with my friend and colleague, Dr. Longs, about the mentality of the police years ago. I think that our interactions with them tend to be less because we didn't necessarily grow up in the circumstances where we had to interact with the police as often as maybe some of our colleagues on the who were a little less fortunate than us. But I think the mentality has been the same, and I think we see that. Let's use the Malice Green case as an example, where they beat Malice Green. The two white officers beat Malice Green to death, and were convicted by a predominantly black jury down at Frank Murphy. That led to a change in the whole system. They changed that court, mm-hmm. if you all recall, from being the Frank Murphy Hall of Justice or the Recorder's Court to the Frank Murphy Hall of Justice, where instead of the jurors coming from the city of Detroit, which is predominantly black, they come from all of Wayne County now. They had a problem with black jurors convicting white officers of misconduct or the death of a black person. And so the system's been like that for years and years and years. It's just coming to the forefront. They were upset about the O.J. Simpson verdict. And subsequent to that, there was a discovery of what's known as the suppression file, the suppression of black jurors right here in Wayne County. Over a million black jurors were left out of the jury pool for little reasons like you didn't answer the jury questionnaire or your driver's license was suspended, things of that nature. So when you have a million blacks not part of the system, you understand how that leads to blacks being convicted of crimes that they may be innocent of, and it also leads to the other side of the equation, officers killing and abusing black citizens and not being found guilty of it. And that's what you have all over the country. You have over and over and over again white officers killing black people. What you don't see, though, is you don't see any black officers killing white people. That's what you don't mm-hmm. see. Doesn't that kind of say a mouthful? And so the attitude and the understanding and the concept is it's all right if you kill a black person, we'll cover you. But if you're a black officer, you better not kill a white person. I can't think of one incident of that in the last 5-10 years. Can any of you? Can anybody think of one incident? I don't care what that white person was doing where a black officer shot him. The one incident I can think of charged an officer and he was found guilty quickly. I think that was down in Ohio.
Right.
Kurt, you may be able to refresh my recollection. I think it was down in Ohio, but it was fairly recently, within the last 2 or 3 years, where a black officer killed a white driver, a white motorist. It was found guilty, and they charged him quickly. And so that sends a message, right? It sends a message to the police officers. If you kill a white person, you better be damn sure you're doing the right thing, and especially if you're a black officer doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you kill a black person, heck, if all of us shoot, we're justified in the shooting. I mean, if one officer shoots, you know, it's a little wide. You shoot, nobody else did. That mentality. But if we all shoot, then we all were justifying the shooting. That's what that tells me. And so I'm back to the same situation where you got an unarmed woman who didn't get caught, and the police weren't called there because the woman was a threat to anybody. She was called there because she was acting out, and the mother said, "I don't want to hurt her."
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
right.
Come quickly, my daughter. I need you to save me from my daughter. She's about to kill me, which is altogether different type of distress call. She said, my daughter's out of control, and I need you to come get her under control, or I'm going to have to hurt her. And,
right.
And they come with
point.
The guns drawn, according to the Facebook, information I've gotten. They come with the guns drawn. Already in the mood for violence. And it's interesting, I'll say this real fast. I got a call just like this yesterday from another young lady out in Taylor. The exact same situation. She's got a one-year-old child in her hand. Police are after a guy about a traffic incident. They're running her house, guns drawn, putting a gun at her and her. She's got a one-year-old baby in her hand, and she didn't have anything to do with the situation. The guy they're looking for is the next-door neighbor. He wasn't, you know, wanted for shooting somebody or something along those lines. It was just a traffic incident. It was a traffic stop, and he didn't stop. But they're running her house with their guns drawn. You know, and that's right. The type of stuff you don't see going on in the white community. And so it's more than just training. It's a unspoken or maybe even spoken understanding that as long as you do it to the blacks, it's all right. We'll cover you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fire him, if they fire him and don't make the record look too bad, they'll leave the police department and go to another police department and do the exact same thing. Because that's what officers do. They go from one department to another. They don't get charged. They don't get convicted. And they go from one department to another and do the same thing, but hide it a little better. That's all. It's traffic stops. It's the same thing over and over and over again. And this is just an example of why it happens over and over again and how they get away with it.
Yes. I mean, they're being trained to shoot at black images, black men. The article went on to say that the images had hoodies, that black men with hoodies on. And so I want to remind the audience to tap one of your phones to join the conversation. And so I do see you, Marshawn Kinsey. Your line is open.
Yeah. I remember back in the early days when we had a song out, I think the Public Enemy came out with, and it was 911 is a joke in our town. And we used to make so much fun jokes about how 911 used to never show up to our communities, never come. When something happened, y'all just come out to my community. And they got together and said, we just going to go and do what we're supposed to do and go to those black communities. They came killing us, busting on us. And as you can see, you got to understand, if you're in the academy and they're training you, they're literally training you like, look, we're going to shoot niggas. We're going to put the hoodie on them. And they made lots of jokes. And so why did in there?
You're breaking up. You're breaking up.
These rookie guys are waiting for the day after all this training. They're waiting for the exciting day that they can finally pull up and kill a nigga. And so what happens is when you get a call, when they say, look how many cars showed up. This is a woman calling on her daughter. I'm a woman calling on a daughter. A woman calling on a woman. All these police cars, when they hear that she has mental issues, this is what we've been waiting for. It's like that joke when Kevin Hart said the lion that's been waiting for someone to fall into the thing. This is what they've been waiting for. As soon as they hear mental issue, it's black already is a good excuse. But the fact they got mental issues, guns already drawn now because now we have 100% opportunity to kill them because we can say off top something's wrong with them. Something was mentally wrong with them. So already in their head, they're already thinking of every excuse they can say when they draw us come out to come and kill them because they've been practicing in their academy for all these years, shooting at these black little mannequins and never had a chance to really just feel what it's like to do it, you know? And so they get out there and they thrive at it. You know, you got to understand something. They have rubber bullets. They have rubber bullets since the late 90s. A rubber bullet can shoot you from 100 feet. And six rubber bullets would take a woman down. Six rubber bullets would take them down. But why? Why would they want to use that on somebody? Why would they want to race the beanbag on the rubber bullet? And then the beanbag goes back after you test the black guy. We're going to put that back in our dome. No, they better kill him, shoot the bullet, and kill him. It's like we look at it like it ain't been. FBI already said that the police officers have been infiltrated by the Ku Klux Klan. You can just Google that. It's already been noted. that we know the Klan is pretty much has always been the police. That's what the whole, if you go to the whole system of who was protecting, it was right there. And see, in California, when the police were doing this and the Black Panthers got their guns, what they do, they took guns away from the niggas. Oh, take our guns. Why? We don't have guns. Why? You can see them open carry and Chicago and them. They never did that here with us. Because they seen when the Black Panthers got, oh, no, it's an equal playing field. Back when it was an equal playing field and it was like, you know, we can scare you, you can intimidate us, you come in there, they got rid of that part. They made sure they got a chance to outnumber us, but now we outnumber with their guns. They got it systematically set in place where they know how many blacks to hire within those in those places. Because I remember in Long Beach, what they would do was they would go and they would take pictures of the young kids when they were teens, take pictures of their tattoos, pictures of them. They would automatically tag them to a gang. And so, see, once you are in a gang, they automatically put you on a gang file. When you're on that gang file, you can never become a police officer. So they spend years going after our teens, just taking a picture. They wouldn't even call. I had to go to Long Beach and have the parents go to tell them that they had to take all the kids off of the gang file because y'all wasn't reporting to the parents. Y'all was taking a picture and registering them as a gang. So if you're going to take my kid and say, you took a picture and say he's a gang member, I should know. So I should be able to keep him off the street. I could do some kind of initiative to get him off the street because now I didn't know he was out there gangbanging. But they don't do that. They take the pictures, put the name in it, and that's the streakest file. And so they always pulling back teams up. Come here, what's your name? What's this? Where you from? Oh, you're from, that's your gang. And they do that. So now you number off, you take out all the numbers of the police, of the young black men who want to be police officers. It's done. They shoot it down out the system. And this is early 2000, 2004. You can Google on Fox 11 News when I was there. You got to understand, when I was in Long Beach and I had the community center, I was on Fox 11 News. You would think the mayor, the lieutenants and everybody, after seeing the gang in the bitch that we were doing, them on Fox News, that the mayor and them would come. Do you understand? They started pissing in front of my house. They got so peed at me for doing the gang community because I said, if you come to our community, you got to wear shirts, dress shirts. No more gang attire, dress shirts. So I got teens walking to my community in dress shirts. Oh, no, he's changing it. So I didn't understand that they literally were getting almost millions of dollars for a gang intervention and gang task force. They get billions of dollars. So the more murder and gang violence that happens in their community, the more mental illness happens in their community, they can hire more officers. So they can say, we have a lot more mental people. They can send to the federal government. The federal government is sending more money, and the task force was making millions of dollars. And me getting rid of gangs is taking that task force money. So Lydia Holly told me, Rashawn, it's best for you to get out of Long Beach. You're not ready to prepare to deal with Long Beach right now. This is a very powerful company. You got to remember, Long Beach got a NAACP award for how they dealt with racism. What they did, they hired all of the frontline people who are on the civil rights movement, and they got an award for that because the way they dealt with it. They took them off the front line, gave them $40 an hour jobs, and then they got them off the front line, and the system, and that's when it became a national thing. Just hire the pastor, give him a job as a city employee, and the movement is going to slow down, and that's how they slowed it down. And Long Beach got an award for that. So this is something that has been stagnantly always oppressing us on a higher level continuously in our communities. And so what we have to do is we know they want to come kill us. It's not no doubt about it. You know, you say mental illness is 6 cars pull up because you got to understand, I wish I had a camera. I wish we had a GPS on all the police officers that was like in a 3-mile radius. And as soon as that came in, I wanted to see how many U-turns was made at that time. Ooh, a black mental ill patient. Woo! I mean, it's like the high, you know, the cowboys, they rushing there with the guns already blazing. She got 6, but I guarantee you all those 6 pullets probably came from all 6 officers. All 6 officers. That was not like one officer took off. I got it, guys. Don't worry. Everybody bust. Blah, 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 blah. Everybody want to get one off. You know, scamming the kid and everything because at this point, the blood, it's all Call of Duty season now. So they don't even care the little boy got hit. They didn't even care about the black kids getting hit in here. It was the helpful, simple fact that we'll worry about this when it's done. I've been waiting my whole academy life to do this. So what we have to do is we got to get our mother's board. We got to get our churches. We got to get our pastors. We got to create our own Black 1-1, Church 1-1, something like this, where we start to call our mother's board. We start to call our community limits for these places. At these churches, we got churches on every corner. There's no reason why we shouldn't have these churches all the time, 24 hours a day, to have someone who can deal with mental issue patients, mental these things, or anything like that, where there's a number that can be called for our people to call. It goes right to the church, and the pastor sends somebody right out to them to come talk to them. You know, if there's people who already been diagnosed with mental illness, we need to get them in touch with the churches, the people who are in the community already right now. So we already have a relationship with them. This is such and such as this. So if something go down, we already know the call. If it's a million up, we need to know all those millions and all those set up in place. We need to make sure that these officers, you know, the thing to get them is we have to say, you got to release your name. When you kill somebody and you do it in this way, we need to see your name and your picture. We need to have that on the website. We need to have that embarrassment there because, see, they know that they can hide. They can kill you, and they can go back and do it and go back in the thing. As soon as we do something, they got you on the front line. This is a Black guy right here, his picture and everything. When they do something, you don't get to see the officer, and you can see it's just blatant murder. And they go in, and then, like they said, they trade him to another officer place. No, we need to have a website saying, these are officers who have killed Black people. These are the ones who have done it. Some of them have been validated, some not, whatever, just so you know. So when you see these officers of the community, hey, man, you know, you got history. You already got one under your belt. I want to look and see all these officers that have killed Blacks and then look at their selection of if they've been validated or promoted. I wonder how many Black officers have killed Black men and have been promoted. So that's easy to be seen and done now. The paperwork is there. We just got to go through that paperwork and start seeing so we can see there's got to be a fringe benefit in this. You guys are not this eager and this hungry to kill these unless there's something that is gained from this. You know, and they keep saying, oh, where's this, you know, Blacks kill Blacks. Everybody kill everybody. You go to any country that you can't run to America to, they all killing each other. Like I said, I'm from Compton. When they was busting on each other, my mom couldn't take me to an America and say, come on, my son. I got another place for you to go where the violence is gone. Everybody escaped their violence here in the country that we fought for, and they make it violent for us. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no, please. No, absolutely not. No, you don't. No apologies here. This is what we're here for. You know, you made several great points here. The GAIN Task Force grants. You're absolutely right. I've been working in economic development and for, you know, with funds development for all types of causes. And you're, and I personally, and I can attest to what you just said regarding for the GAIN Task Force, but the monies were meant to create something within the community, you know, operated by the people for the benefit of curbing or servicing the gang members, you know, those communities in order to, you know, reduce gang violence. It was never meant to go to the police departments to hire more officers. That's what they did with it. You know why they did that? Because they didn't have a Dr. Mary Lee out there who knows where the money's supposed to go. The community was never, ever educated and still is not being educated about funding for community development and for entrepreneurship and for, you know, with money that provide really solutions. So what they do is when the money isn't used by the inner city or by projects and programs or churches who know, number one, they don't know it's even there, so how are they going to use it? So what they do is, okay, the monies are here, they weren't used, and so then they're going to reallocate. They call it reallocate the money, okay? But basically, they have let it sit there without informing the community that it's even there to even help curb violence by the citizens, by the community. So they call it reallocate. I call it misappropriation because that's not what it was there for to begin with, and they know it. So it's all a game. It's all a game. It's a part of
what Dr. Moncrief said earlier, part of the systemic racism. You know, everybody is not for this. I mean, there are many, many people of other races, white and other races, who don't even know this. They don't even know what's going on. Many of them don't. But those who are the powers to be, or those who are in position, the movers and shakers, they know. They know because they're part of the scheme. I like what you said about solutions. I love hearing different types of solutions. Grant money could be utilized by the churches. You say, you know, have these helplines. So when there's a crisis, yeah, you call the police. If you feel you need company, call the crisis line as well. That's going to connect to a community action group of our own peers. That is a very, I mean, I think that's excellent. That's a brilliant solution. And that isn't something that we cannot do. We can do that. We can do that, and let's do it. Let's do it.
Very few. Yes, very few.
And I like the part about the picture website. The website, I mean, you know, they got their criminal websites where you can go and search and find out, you know, who's who, and they got all, you know, people posted to want it. Hey, let's do that too as well. These are what I consider good solutions, viable solutions. I'm excited. No need to be sorry. Who wants the floor? I'll just give it to whoever wants it right now. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I was just going to
put some of my little medical background in it. Dr. Longs has, you know, mentioned, you know, some of the mental things that people suffer from as a result of this taught racism that we are being oppressed by. He mentioned, or somebody mentioned, it is me, the stress, depression, the anxiety, the mental disorders, the schizophrenia, the manic behaviors, the violent behaviors, the acting out behaviors. But we didn't talk about the physical manifestations of what's happening. Okay, we see it manifesting itself in our people actually being killed by it, which is nothing new, but if we wanted to just step back and look at what happens to us physically, we get all stressed out, we get hypertension, we have headaches, we have abdominal pain, we develop ulcers, we develop reflux, we have sleep disorders, eating disorders, obesity, starvation, sexual dysfunction, irregular period, we use and abuse drugs. We can conditions with manifestations of like our diabetes becoming out of control. We have disproportionate burden of diabetes in our community. We get suppression of our immune system. More cases, more of us, you know, die from things like the flu, the COVID. We just can't just look at what's happening to us and saying, you know, it's bad that the police are out of control and they are killing us. We need to step back and look at this as bigger issues. The killing of us is actually the last step in this cycle. But all those things that I just mentioned are manifestations that we get to before we actually get to the place where they kill us. And Attorney Fortner was absolutely right. You never hear of a black officer killing a white person. That accident. They're not trained. Black officers are not trained to kill white people. Black officers are being trained to kill black people. All officers are being trained to kill black people.
If you don't know how to handle a situation, then you shouldn't be in that situation. You don't learn how to a mentally ill person at that scene. You're supposed to know what you're going to do before you get to that scene. And what you've been trained to do is, when you get to that scene, that's your opportunity. That's your opportunity to kill, mm-hmm. and nobody will ask questions. That's what you've been trained. And we have to back up and say, there's two pieces of mental illnesses here. It's the racism mental illness that the system is training our doctors, our physicians, our lawyers, our teachers, our police. And then there's the victims that we are as a people. And I don't care. That's what we are as a race. We are victims, okay? And the solutions lie not in them. The solutions lie in us. The solutions lie in us going back to a point where we are training ourselves that we are not our enemy. We are training ourselves that we need to help each other and not kill each other, because that's what racism is. So that's my two bits on that.
So we need to retrain ourselves that we are not enemies to one another.
Right. See, we've already been trained. Whites have already been trained that blacks are the enemy. Okay? Now we're training blacks that blacks are our enemy. Our kids are already killing our own kids, and the police are already killing our kids. The white police, now the black police, I don't even know the color of the police officers who were involved in the shooting. I don't know. Okay? And I don't care. This shouldn't have to happen. When people are, I'm a physician. I am trained when somebody is down and unconscious, there are certain steps that we have to do. If we don't do those steps, that's malpractice. Doesn't matter if the patient lives or dies. There's certain things that we need to do. And there's certain things that police need to be trained to do. One of those things are, if you don't know, don't rush into a room with your guns pulled. But they're not trained that way. Police are trained to protect themselves. They're not trained to protect the public. Now, that's the bottom line. That's the truth. When a police officer is shot and killed, everybody and their mama is looking for that murderer. Okay? When a black person is shot and killed, well, that's just the way life is. And when the police shoot and kill a black person, well, we thought that they were going to do something bad. See, they get a pass that they shouldn't get. Police should be trained to protect and serve the public, like that little logo on their door said. They're not trained to protect and serve themselves. They come here. They get the training. We pay for their training. The black folks in the city of Detroit pay for their training, okay? They get trained, and then they take that training. They're here for a year. Then they take that out to another area, to another neighborhood. Training still is to hurt black people. We pay them to hurt us. That makes no sense. You mentioned Malice Green. Malice Green, that's when Kim Worthy came into power, okay? Kim Worthy did an excellent job of prosecuting the police officers that killed Malice Green. Found them guilty. But what happened when the police officer had his trial just with the judge? I'm not saying that the police are racist, but they're not stupid. The judge was George Crockett. Remember that? And George Crockett found the police officer not guilty, threw the stuff out. A jury of peers found these guys guilty. They found a black judge to throw it out, because we always try to be fair. We always try to be honest. Okay? Malice Green is dead. When we stop, when we stop being a part of excusing their behaviors, that's a solution. It's okay for us to be forgiving, but we shouldn't forget. And we should demand that we are part of this system that applies the justice. Those guys being suspended means nothing to me. The state police suspended them, not the Detroit police officers, and not the day that they killed this girl. Okay? Mm-hmm. They still looking around to find a weapon. Remember when the police used to drop guns? They probably still do. Drop things. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't know.
Right.
But it's
right.
This is. You know, now I'm ranting. I apologize.
No.
But we have to get
past this. So your solution is to retrain ourselves. How do we start retraining ourselves?
First of all, I think we should start respecting ourselves and respecting and calling what they used to say a spade, okay? Three police officers in a room, and the only person shot is a black lady who doesn't have a gun in her hand. Let's call it what it is. That's murder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have what they thought was going on, what was going to happen, and what happened are two different things. We have to be able to stand up and say, murder is murder. Okay? Now, if you want to give them probation and all that good stuff after they've been found guilty, that's fine. Okay, that's what you want to do, but call it like it is. We have to stand up for our own people. Stop looking for somebody else to come in and dispense justice. We have to start going to school and becoming those lawyers and becoming those judges. And we have to demand that we have when we're on trial and we see that our jury is 11 white and 1 black. We have to have laws that says no. This has to change.
Mm-hmm.
This is not right. We will not start this case until we have a jury of this person's actual peers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We have to demand, and then we have to, this may sound stupid, okay, but we have to go out and start voting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's the one right that we have that's free, and we don't express it, okay? We don't need even voter suppression here. Our people don't get out and vote. We need to go back and vote and change it, demand, not just when our kids get arrested and then we see what color the jury is, but do it now. We just missed the last election. So what? There's one coming up next year, too, okay? One in August and one in November. Mm-hmm. Get out and vote. Express yourself, you know? Demand your rights. Demand our rights. Don't wait till we get shot in the street like a dog to say that there's something wrong. Be a part of these juries. Demand that when you walk into a courtroom, I know this judge, he moved this lady's trial from Detroit to Port Huron. He moved her trial from Detroit to Port Huron. Detroit, she would have had a black jury. In Port Huron, she had a white jury. How is that a jury of her peers? The judge did that on purpose to punish her because the judge told her plea agreement, and she said no, she was not going to plead guilty. And his punishment for her was to move her trial to an all-white area. That should be wrong. People should be up saying, hey, if he did it to her, he could do it to us. But there's no outrage. There's nothing. Solution?
Yeah.
Vote. Be a part of this. And don't wait for something personally to happen to you. Get involved now. Make your decisions now. What do you want to see happen? That's my solution.
Thank you. I do want to ask Attorney Fortney, your take on these strategic moves. You know, Dr. Moncrief said that they placed this one case, the Malice Green case. So George Crockett is a black judge. I don't know if you can speak on this or not. I mean, I know you're an active attorney and in these courts. But I really would like to know your take on these strategies. Mr. Portney. I know you're in the court. Okay, so I don't know. Okay, maybe it's a different phone number. Mr. Portney?
There should be some other attorneys on the call, too, who could tap in as well.
Someone just did. Let's see.
I'm calling from the Midwest. I want to ask the lawyer, what's the definition for a jury of your peers, the legal definition? Does it mean of the same gender or race or ethnicity?
Attorney Portney, maybe he's had some problems. Okay, it looks like his line has dropped. So if he's able to get back on, and then we'll.
Yeah,
we'll,
I'll be listening, but I don't think that a jury of your peers mean that the jury has to be all the same ethnicity as the person that's being tried, the suspect, nor the gender if the suspect is a female. So I wonder would the attorney clarify that when he comes in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Dr. Long.
Yeah, with that question, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I would just say, sort of sarcastically, of the three times I've been called for jury duty, I was never selected. And so you hear different things in terms of how some attorneys may want to pull their jury, and I've always been told to have any level of education behind you, you're primarily going to get selected. One case I was dismissed from was a murder case. Matter of fact, all three of them. I kind of wonder why I was always dismissed, but I think that happened.
Okay, you're kind of low, Dr. Long. You're hard to hear, difficult to hear.
Oh, you can't hear me?
Now I can. Not earlier. It was you were fading.
Yeah, so I know there's some other attorneys on the line. If they could tap their line and answer that question, it would be great. But going back to solutions, I've always, my goal was always focus on the idea of primary intervention or primary solutions, which, it starts at home. And at home, then you add in the whole school influence, the religious influence, et cetera. We're waiting on, say in this case with trying to fix the police, that's kind of brutal, I think, because, it's, as attorney had said and Dr. Moncrief has alluded to and Dr. Tynes had stated, the police was designed to oversee us, and it's always been like that. And think if it's African Americans, it's the same principle. We have to fix it on our own, just like Marshawn says. We have to do it. We can't wait on somebody to fix the school system. Of course, it's designed not to be fixed. And particularly in a city like Detroit, where it's easy to go back years to see, let's say, some of the schools that exist now, Southeastern High School, King High School, Cass, et cetera. Years ago, those schools were predominantly white. And look at them now, they're predominantly black. But look at the lack of resources that have occurred over the years. There was an article by Carmanos, who was very honest. He's a white billionaire. We called when they put the freeway system in and divided what used to be Black Bottom and all those neighborhoods that had a lot of black ownership, that was on purpose. And, this is coming from a Caucasian man who went to Detroit Public Schools. Actually, he went to Western High School, and he could see it clear as day. So we already know those sort of things are in play, but what are we going to do as a result? you know, as it relates to mental health, behavioral health, mental wellness, et cetera, you know, we have to be more willing to have some honest discussions of what that means, even with the respect of racism being upon all of us. We have to talk about that because, you know, it's just like what Dr. Claude Anderson and his, you know, pillar of what happens in our communities. When you have the media telling you who you are, what you are, et cetera, and then we're left in the cities to just fend for ourselves, and we're going to have all this black-on-black crime along with crime created by law enforcement, et cetera. So, you know, we have to take it on our own to fix us. That's the bottom line.
Right. So just tap one on your phone, attorneys who are here. Please tap one of your phones, and we will open up your line, and you can join our conversation. Tap one on your phone and to join our conversation. And we certainly appreciate you joining us tonight. I would like to circle back around to Marshawn. Any additional thoughts? Okay, Marshawn. And I do like the that we've got a okay, go ahead.
It's I'm looking at the concept of it down and set up in a sense in a place. And as we were looking at, you know, when she was talking about as far as what we need to do essentially in our communities, you know, one of the things is we recognize that the judges in our communities are voted for. So we need to start focusing on those judges and looking at things we vote for. We need to start voting for the district attorney and making that just as important as for the president. Those things need to be important for us so that we go in there. It's the same thing with the sheriff's department. We need to start vetting the sheriff's department before they get in there and vote. There needs to be a team in place where that sheriff's department come and meets with a group of individuals in that community, and we're able to talk about what's going on. We need to start getting our youth and some of our individuals going on these police with the police in the cars with them to some of these places. And it says there's always opportunity to do ride along, but we need to start creating a ride along system that puts in place where our kids essentially and our youth and people can do those ride along with the police so they can see how things are handled, so they can just be get things more conductively done. You know, another thing we need to ensure is that as we start to do this, that we create, you know, back in the days when I was growing up, we used to have the program that used to be called the DARE program, and we used to like the DARE program because the police officers will pull up and they will give you baseball cards, they will give you little gift bags and little things. And so every time we see the police, we would run to them. Like the way I see police officers now, when we see police going up and watching and counting and stuff when they came, they would always have a little dare. You got any dare thing? Here you go, kids. Here you go. And they stop that. So we got to get back to those programs where we got to force these police officers, even if we're getting a lot of different kind of projects and toys and things like this that we're going to deliver to these police departments. And we're going to say, you have an obligation to deliver these to the kids in the community. We're going to force your hand to go and be in the community with the kids and pass these things out. Here's a box of 1,000 things, and we want that gone by the month. There's no reason why we're giving you this money that you shouldn't be out there reaching out to our kids, you know? And so building that better relationship, because if we teach them to see these little kids, because back in the days, a police officer used to say, hey, Marshawn, hey, what's up, man? Because you would see him car by every day. Every day we're in the military playing football, that same officer comes through, what's up, guys, about 4 o'clock, what's up, man, what's up? You know everybody's name. He know everybody's name. So when something come over, even when it's a big thing come, Officer Henry be right there. Oh, no, hold on, wait a minute, calm down. I got this is Henry. This is Marshawn's family right here. I know these guys for years. Come here, man. You come over here. You know, and he'll tell the guy to come, you know, and they have those relationships. We don't have there's no more empathy in the community no more, because there's this substance divisiveness that has happened. You know, you got to understand, we're the only people who ever came out with the F the police. You know what I'm saying? We had songs F the police. You know, we openly disrespected the police vividly, you know, and changed the elements, you know, name things the ghetto bird, you know, a lot of the slogan 5-0, all this stuff they know about how to create is stuff that we created for them in a sense. So there's always been this Batman Joker relationship with the black and police officers, you know, in a sense. And so these are the things that we need to focus on in a sense to get the police officers to have more better opportunity to the community, force their hand. you know what I'm saying, to respect us. We need to force their hands to come and meet out with us in our communities on a consistent basis. It needs to. When I was in Long Beach, we had a youth and police dialogue where we brought the police out to sit down with the youth and talk to the youth. And we wanted to do that once a month where we just have some representative of the youth come down and talk about what different ailments in there, how many times you're getting pulled over, why this is happening, why this is happening, and get these things done. There should be no reason why there's not a place where police officers are coming to address people in those communities. Every police, every precinct needs to have a community outreach on Wednesdays where we can see what's going on in the community, how many people are dying. Because, you see, when I was born in Compton, mm-hmm. there were so many gang wars going on that they would never tell my mom, hey, you know, right now this gang and this gang are getting into it, guys. So you might want to stay home. Don't let your kids come out right now because you might stay home. I'm thinking it's a normal day. Bah, I'm on top of roofs now because I didn't get the memo. So the officers like that. They make sure you don't want the memo because, like they said, I think I just heard a recording last week where it was some officers shooting. They said the blacks are shooting each other. The officers like, just let them do it. Mm-hmm. It's only when it's prudent for them to come in there, when, like I said, when there's some kind of benefit. I was talking to my boy Mike, and he was just telling me, like, you know, when they do kill some blacks, they get 6 weeks off paid vacation, 6 weeks off paid leave. It's not a punishment. They're not at home crying. They get celebrated when they kill them. It's a celebration. You go, yo, man, you did it. You did it. Man, we're going to pay you for free. Stay home for 6 weeks, month and a half. You get to live it. Oh, boy, thank you. You did it. High five. They celebrate him. He don't take no punishment at all. What punishment he take? He at home chilling right now, still getting paid after killing a man, killing us. Celebration for him. So if we don't start addressing the protocols, what happens after that, he shot someone. He should not be able to go home, whether he on the desk or whether he should be doing community service just like blacks do in the community. You come right here to the church and you walk around here and you serving food to the homeless with the blacks. Since you got a problem killing them, come serve food with the blacks and homeless. This should be your punishment for 6 weeks. You shouldn't be at home. Mm-hmm. These are the things we need to change and focus on. So as time is driving through, we are coming close to getting a new season done. We're coming close to getting a new season done, surely. I digress.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Dr. Longs, you have a nonprofit organization that addresses community mental health. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah.
And primarily I want to know what can we do your organization, you know, for awareness and to educate? I think our communities, do they even know that I'm certain that they're not even aware that there is a mental health crisis amongst the blacks at the level or race that it is, or has the community just become accustomed to and feel that this is normal? You know, I don't know, you tell me.
So, yeah, we have a nonprofit LLSM.
You're low again. Your voice is very, like, distant.
You can hardly hear me? Hold on.
Okay. Well, we can hear you better
now. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah.
Is that better? Yeah, so our nonprofit is called LLSM. It's based on the names of individuals, plus Dr. Harris is a part of our team. And, you know, a lot of things we talked about on your show, Dr., we've tried to enlighten and educate the community. For example, we did an event at the Charles Wright Museum back in 2019. It was entitled Mental Health and Musical Genius. So, yeah, on our experts on our panel, yeah, myself, you know, two physicians, a psychologist, master social worker, and attorney Russell Smith, who you've met. But the twist, because we know in terms of our community, you know, whether or not there's a stigma or whatever, we put that event on with inviting well-known musical artists in our community, some of these artists who had also play with higher, much more known artists such as Kid Rock and things like that. So we had to speak on behalf of what they knew about mental health or behavioral health, et cetera, from the perspective of a lot of our creative people wind up dying from all sorts of things and you just never know. So that whole project was to engage artists based on their creativity. It was to engage them in terms of what they know about it. And I would say the event went on really well. But we also did a program where we were looking at police shootings, police violence, and we were trying to answer what does it take to meet the criteria to be a law enforcement officer. Again, I thought that went over really well, but we were sort of, I forgot who mentioned that, but we were kind of giving some advice to kind of back up on what we were doing. So our nonprofit, we've tried some creative ways to educate the community. We've, I would say for the most part, it's been fairly successful, but the continuation of it has always been an issue. Incidentally, we're having an event next Thursday, well, on the day after Thanksgiving, again, another event with mm-hmm. a comedy show where we're part of the nonprofit, and we're going to use those funds to help elderly people and vets, et cetera, like that. So our nonprofit is there now. The key is getting us to listen and wanting to engage. You know, when Marshawn was talking, he's always a very creative person. You know, I was going to pose something to him in terms of, you know, the black community, no matter where you are, you know, we have an enriched pool of creativity, athleticism, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, you know, with this NIL agreement, you know, names, images and likeness, you know, is how would he approach a creative way in terms of that idea, in terms of athletes using their names, images, and likeness, which is similar when you think about it, how law enforcement uses their NIL when they're policing our community. What can be done with that sort of logo with our young athletes? Because, of course, with the athletes, you do have the families connected, whether mom and dad are together or not. You know, would that be a unique way to, again, enlighten our community regarding what's happening in the community besides somebody playing PAL football, PAL baseball, but really using that opportunity to engage young people at a much earlier age before they leave middle school? You know, when he was talking, I just thought about that. I'm sure he could probably take that and use it in some way where we can use it as an educational piece and enlighten our communities. Because for sure, you know, and if anyone watched the Deion Sanders interview on 60 Minutes in terms of how he's engaging black kids to come to the where he is at Jackson State, man, I mean, I think we have to use mm-hmm. some creative means like that to get everybody's attention. Because for the most part, you know, we have these cases with these police shootings. We've had so many. You know, it seems like black folks, we have short memories, or maybe we're so inundated with trauma, we don't want additional trauma, so it's easy to deny it and, you know, put it on the back burner, but it's always burning regardless what burner you put it on.
Okay, thank you so much. I see, well, I did see, I don't know what has happened. Well, Dr. Longs is, excuse me, Dr. Tynes is chiming in. Dr. Tynes.
Yes, ma'am. Just one commentary. What happens is that we, in Michigan in particular, and I think this is going to be indicative of around the United States, and Dr. Longs can correct me, that there's a tendency to treat mental health with bullets instead of with pills. We see that in Michigan, we have had numerous deaths and sometimes unarmed deaths with police and doing a firing squad on a schizophrenic patient who forgot to pay for coffee or tea at one time. But because it's African American and what we're going to call the DOESA, the D-O-E-S-A-A, Descendants of Enslaved Africans in America, because the immigrant black, the African, the Caribbean, they get a little bit more leeway, especially when they start speaking that accent. And all my friends from overseas will tell you that when the cops stop them, they make their accent thick, you know, to make sure that they're not recognized as a DOESA, Descendant of Enslaved Africans in America. And Malcolm X spoke about that in the 60s, that what you should do is a cop stop you, you wrap your head up and call yourself Ali Baba, you know, and speak with an accent. And to avoid the Mississippi, Alabama treatment as a black person. And so we have to be real about that, that some of our mental health, and Dr. Longs, correct me, I would cause an acute adjustment reaction, and that it may be transient. Because living as a descendant of enslaved Africans in America, a DOESA, you have a lot of psychological stress, in other words, just being black. And with the racism now that is even heightened as a result of groups who have now looked at historical realities of who's who, and it's always been known, and, you know, I lived in Detroit for a little while, but I don't know, many of you may not have known that I actually stayed with a Jewish family and attended the Jewish Community Center. And it's well known with all rabbis that North America is the birthplace of the Hebrews that we know, because they initially started an Egyptian colony of Ur and then came over to North Africa, which is called Canaan, what we call Palestine, or now it's where they house the country of Israel. But right next door is also called Mizraim or Kemet or Egypt. We know that the word Hebrew comes from H-A-R-I-B-U, H-A-R-I-B-U, which is Hebrew, which is the Medonetia or Egyptian word for across the water. So before you had Hebrew, you had Hebrew, and those are your people now who practice the, who follow the God of Abraham. And those people here in the United States are now, that Africans and Americans have kind of realized that, so we have a new attack because we are, you know, our people are Hebrew, but they don't necessarily have to be Jewish. The term Jewish was a recent term that was developed and that, you know, mainly applies to those of European extraction from Russia, from Germany, being the Khazars or the Akhenazis. But because blacks now are identifying with that religious faith, you know, that's doing some psychological, emotional, physical stress and a lot of systemic racism pushback. If you say you're Muslim, if you say you're Rastafarian, if you say you are Krishna, that you're father Hare Krishna, nobody says anything. But when they confuse the Hebrew with the Hebrew or Hebrew with Jewish, then there's a new threat and mental illness that's going on in our society. We already know that Israel already was a fight where a lot of men, in particular, are conflicted when it comes to Christianity and its association with slavery, and that you have a non-historical white Jesus in that, and then that way you have to develop a mental illness to deal with that religion when the scriptures clearly define that, you know, he was from North Africa. That's why he grew up as a child in Africa to avoid Herod's execution. So we have mental illness built into our religion where we have to do denial of reality. And then you have the educational reality where even if you have a PhD or an MD, you're still an NIG. Even if you have a PhD or an MD, you're still an NIG. And education and income are not associated because you have MDs who are not working, you have PhDs who are not working. So, and they talk about white privilege versus, you know, black reality. And so those are a lot of mental stresses. And then the treatment that you're going to have by European Americans and Arab Americans and Indian Americans from India and, you know, Pakistani Americans, you're going to have all of those people who have been taught systemic racism through media, through TV, through orientation and coming to this country. All of that, even the actual dope-ed wino knows that they do that, and we have to look at us as a people at being self-medicating. And we self-medicate with marijuana, and we fought so hard for to get marijuana legal, but we didn't fight hard for our children. We didn't fight hard for our youth, because all drugs take you away from something, whether it's physical pain, emotional pain, or psychological pain. That's why we do drugs. That's why they do alcohol. That's why they do weed, cocaine, crack, et cetera. So we have to address that. We are in a highly induced mental health environment, and I ask Dr. Laws to correct me if I'm wrong, but just being black in America is a highly stressful psychological environment. And so the only people who are going to help us is us, and but we do find that when we give our kids African self-esteem that does have no slavery in it, that they excel and they tend to be mentally healthy. And it's mainly the adults who have been beat up and have the slave mentality, who don't know their identity and have mental illness. When you want to say that you're healthy and you're strong and you're proud, but you don't have nothing to stand up on and sustain that, you can't relate that to a landmass or historical fact. That's mental illness and mental injury that you don't know, that's, you know, subconscious. All mentally healthy people have a landmass and a land base that they call their origins, because that's like coming out your mother's womb. All healthy landmass people have a history and an identity. And the African-American identity did not start with their enslavement here in the Americas, which started in the 1500s, not 1619. But those are the things that we have to address. And I'm going to put the question to Dr. Longs. Do we have to resolve that conflict of being test tube babies if we accept the definition of only being created during slavery? Do we need to clean out and make sure that we have a relationship to the womb in terms of to our place of origin, a real identity, a real culture, history, versus what's delivered? Because our current image worldwide is based on rap music and movies and videos. It's how we're judged in Germany, how we're judged in France, how we're judged in China, how we're judged in the Middle East, is by rap artists and not the pro-black individuals who actually look out for us, like a minister, a Louis Farrakhan. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Long?
Yeah, you know, my response to Dr. Times is, yeah, for sure, you know, our experience in America, which has primarily been that of enormous trauma and assault on our brains. And we all know in terms of science the impact of trauma on the brain and how brain structures change, and you know, some different parts of the brain are altered, no different than, you know, if you're drinking and cops pull you over and they have you do the cerebellum test and see if you can walk a straight line, things like that. So if we take that same concept and look at the impact of trauma on us, yeah, we're going to have all these different changes, different behaviors. You know, as he was talking, I was finding it interesting because in schizophrenia, it's stated that in schizophrenia, a lot of individuals who are going through a schizophrenic crisis
have what's known as religiosity. And so if we take the concept where, you know, we're searching for who we are, you know, you would think that, well, maybe the majority of black folks who are schizophrenic have more religiosity than whites. But I would say I've seen it in both. But again, my approach to our people with mental illness, I've stated before, there's a lot of bias in medicine, a lot of bias in mental health. And I mentioned a project that Dr. Harris and I participated in where we were both diagnosed as schizophrenic by playing that role in the crisis center early on in our residency. So we know there's bias in the whole diagnosis. And, you know, the thing to keep in mind is that schizophrenia, if it's classic, you know, represents, you know, 1% of the whole population, not, you know, so we know it can't be every black person that shows up in every crisis center around America. That's why, you know, I'm always a proponent in terms of how we handle our health, whether it's mental health or physical health, or spiritual health, you know, it has to be in our own hands. And, but even with that being said, you know, it can be some black hands helping you, but they can be just as traumatic and devastating on your psyche than any person with white hands. My main focus is, you know, we have to acknowledge, yeah, we all know that racism exists. And if we look at the our generation right now, how the suicide rate is up, depression rates are up, anxiety rates are up, then we kind of look at, well, why is it so high now? Why wasn't it as high when we were coming along? Well, of course, you know, we were more cohesive. You knew what the, you know, what it meant to keep your eyes on the prize. And right now, based on, you know, as Dr. Claude Young had mentioned, the control of the media controlling you. And you can see that if you guys watched, you know, Trump's speech last night, you just look at this narcissistic, antisocial person, you see it's all brain training. You know, well, who's listening to it? If you can't weed out what's true and what's untrue, or if you become hypnotized based on all these confabulations, then, you know, you'll go vote for someone like that. Likewise, if our youth and even our adults are hypnotized by all the things that Dr. Tynes had mentioned, it comes, you know, like a battery of assaults every day, then you'll start having different mindsets regarding people who look just like you. But, you know, so the conclusion is not all mental illness is quote-unquote mental illness, and we have to approach it, but if we don't have enough providers, we're going to take a very slow approach and a very concerned approach and methodic approach in terms of quote-unquote what treatment looks like. We'll have a whole lot of mishaps. You know, likewise, they said the primary means of treatment for our individuals who had some forms of mental instability is primary care. Well, if you go to primary care and you only have 10 minutes, well, you're going to make some mistakes. There's no reason, it's no wonder why serotonin-based medicines are the most highly prescribed medications in the world, and definitely in African-American communities. So, you know, my view is, I agree with a lot of things that Dr. Tynes has advocated about and has said numerous times. But in terms of our treatment, you know, it has to be very selective, because if not, you know, we can do even more harm. But I definitely agree that, and even some studies have shown, you know, in terms of the whole presentation of schizophrenia in terms of what it is, trauma is one of the main factors. And so who's been more traumatized and living in America than us? So, but that doesn't mean that every person that, again, wants to be in a crisis center meets the criteria of schizophrenia, because, of course, you know, white folks are usually more so diagnosed with some form of depression known as bipolar depression. So, you know, again, goes back to primary prevention. We have to treat ourselves, love ourselves, and heal ourselves. That's, you know, that's pretty much the way I look at it.
Yeah, this has been, you know, this has been great. I know we're not going to solve it in one night, but I do appreciate the suggested solutions. And we're definitely going to be working on creating new ways of bringing healing to ourselves and helping ourselves. Go ahead. Someone was speaking. Okay. So I would like to at least get one solution or action, Dr. Times. I've got some that I've noted from Dr. Moncrief and others here. I'd like to get a solution.
I'm going to tell you
something that we can do to take action now.
Okay, I'm going to tell you what has worked physically for me. I've been doing this project since 2002. And the project is Reach Out to You for the Future Doctors of Tomorrow in a city of 10,000 people, control study with one school system. And when I came here from 2000 to 2002, the Career Day survey mm-hmm. did not have one student in the whole school system picking doctor as a career. since mm-hmm. that time, after starting the Future Doctors program and being present in the community, wearing my white coats when I would go to events, mm-hmm. Wearing my uniform, my stethoscope, that now that is a routine choice that kids, elementary and middle school, and even high school now pick. I was blessed to produce three doctors from this community plus a lawyer. And how I did that is the same way we were successful down in the city of Detroit, and which is always dismissed. And the data in the record, historical record, will show in the city, in the city of Detroit, that mm-hmm. when you look for two individuals, one young lady is Deborah McGrath, and I called her Deborah Messiah McGrath, I believe was her name. And she went against a local Detroiter. But when she came in, she allowed the Community Task Force for Education, she allowed us, because the school system had used reading and writing arithmetic, computers and funding from the compact, all of this stuff, and the school was dismal. She allowed us to bring in African-centered education, and they call it African-centered curriculum, because I even did the in-service and teaching correct Black history to the teachers. And what happened to the Detroit school system was that, one, the attendance went up and the academic performance went up, especially in the math and sciences. And then what wind up happening as your control study, that you brought this in, you brought the speakers in, Dr. Asa Hilliard, and I've been serving Mother County's Black History, and the kids' self-esteem shot up and their performance shot up, and the crime rate and the suspension rate all went down. Then what you did, Dr. Long's remember the young lady from the east side, I called her Barabbas, I don't know what the, but she was on a school board, and she was very niggerish, and she, wind up driving a young lady from becoming, leaving as the school superintendent. But what happened is that when they took over, they went back to the old ways, we wind up going into receivership. Wayne State, the state had to come in and take over that because of the niggerish mentality, backward mentality, that 99% of Black Americans had been conditioned and trained to. And so you have that case study of a large school system of Detroit introducing what they thought was unimportant, correct Black history, pre-slavery Black history, and the kids responded. And then also you have the 1950s, which led to the Civil Rights Movement. You have the 1920s with the Marcus Garvey, which led to the Garveyan movement and self-empowerment movement. Every time we've used correct black history to uplift our race, and that's the one thing that your black middle class, black upper class rejects, because those are your Stevens, those are your Snowballs from Jangles, those are your House Negroes that Malcolm X would call. And so we always follow them. But then the data up here at in Ben Harbor City, where that turned kids around and made all those kids in the program wind up graduating high school, 100% graduation from high school, and over like 98% actually went to a form of college, whether it was 2-year or 4-year, by dealing with correct black self-esteem. And that's what we piss on. That's what we think is insignificant. That's what we throw in the back burner. But yet every movement had that on there. Look at all Malcolm X taught you. Even Dr. King had joined in that movement and before he was killed. But yet us intellectual blacks are ghetto blacks, are gangster rap blacks, everyday blacks. We piss on our history and who we really are. And then we expect our children to achieve greatness when they don't know who they are and what they can be or what they can become, because we don't have them. We just can't say, oh, you just go ahead and be great. Just go. Based on what? What track record? I'm looking at you living from hand to mouth. I'm looking at you living off of welfare. Yes, welfare is Section 8. Yes, welfare is having a SNAP card or food stamps. You know, yes, welfare is rental assistance. The kids see this, and how are you going to tell them to be something that you never taught them to be? So that's my take, that we have to make that an integral compartment of anything that we move forward to. We have to know correct history, and that we are in the Bible, that the Bible took place in North Africa, and that's where it is, mm-hmm. in continent right now. So anybody profess that they are Christian and don't love a black Jesus or there are black people, then you're a hypocrite and liar, because you don't know the Bible and you don't know your history. So we have to know, when you know your history, you know your greatness. When you know your history, okay. you know your greatness. When you know your history, you know your greatness. Thank you.
Thank you. And I want to thank you all for tonight. This has been great. There are some really good things that are going on right now throughout the country. There are doors being opened, actually, and opportunities for us to, you know, really go into our communities and into our neighborhoods. And we're going to share more of that. More of what is going on nationwide. I will say this much, that it does, there's a HUD project, a HUD program that focuses on STEAM, which yours truly is bringing to, you know, to the forefront soon, where all of us, so when I take information about solutions, and we're going to start, you know, we're going to create these types of programs, and avenues are being, you know, worked on right now and created, and doors are being opened, and it's our time. It is our time. It is our day. It is our turn. We together can and will make a difference. Prayers and faith and perseverance, you know, throughout the years that all of us have exercised, you know, ways are happening for us to help ourselves. So we're real. This is real what we're doing, and I'm excited about it. We're going to continue until we bring about this change
in our communities, and with the resources that have been allocated to do just that. And so we're wrapping it up. I'm just going to ask you to maybe 1 minute, give your last thoughts. I want to thank Dr. Long, Mr. Courtney, Attorney Courtney, for joining us. Sorry that we lost him along the way. So if you can just, and our other attorneys who are here, wish that next time, feel free, to come back, listen, and join us in conversation. So thank you, Dr. Long. Thank you, Dr. Tyne. Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. Thank you, our audience, participants. So with Dr. Moncrief, if we can wrap it up with 1-2 minutes, then Dr. Tyne, Dr. Long.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to,
also,
participate.
Also, we want Marshawn. Thank you.
Yes. Well, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for the opportunity to participate tonight. This whole issue just hits so close to home. Just thinking about solutions, I just want to reiterate the importance of us voting to exercise the power that we have. I wanted to talk about the solutions in terms of the training of our police officers, particularly we're focusing on Detroit tonight, but this is the same across the nation. But when we look at Detroit, we're in the process of giving our police officers a raise, and I am not against people getting raises, particularly people who work in life-threatening situations some of the time, like our Detroit police. But I am concerned that we are training, we're paying to train these police officers, and we're going to give them a raise. And then the suburbs and other major cities are laughing at us. These police officers go in after a year of training, they go in and serve other communities. I think that the officers should be required by law to live in the communities that they serve. I think by law they should be required that if they are trained here, they should have to make a 5-year commitment here. This 5 years will involve them getting promotions, but they need to live in the communities that they work in. And if they carry guns off duty, they should not be paid for that, particularly if they're carrying those guns in communities outside of the communities that they work in. I think that as far as our mental health services are concerned, we need to invest money into our mental health services. We need to increase the number of mental health workers. We need to increase the number of inpatient beds, and we need to increase the insurance coverage for mental health. And finally, we need to offer alternatives to incarceration prior to for mental illnesses committing a crime. We need to do that prior, because I know that we've got some white folks out there who will take, if we make this a law, they will take this law and they will misuse, they will abuse this law. And so we need to make alternatives to incarceration prior to committing a crime available to people. I have all kinds of thoughts about our police and how they should be trained, about racism, that they're being trained in the police force. We have policemen who have mental illnesses other than being racist. These need to be addressed. And if we cannot treat these mental illnesses in our police officers, they need to be put off the force, not shifted to another police department. You know, it was when Attorney Folsom was talking about it, it sounded like pedophiles in the Catholic Church. The priests are preying on kids, and instead of them being punished when they're caught, they're sent to another parish, and they commit the same crimes. So we need to, when we identify mental illness and racism in a police officer, we need to give them treatment. And if the treatment isn't working, they need to be put off. Those are, just thoughts and so forth that I have. But I think we need to become more involved, take more control of what happens. We pay the police. The police do not pay us. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Kine.
Okay. Thank you. So a very, 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 very important point. History rewards our research, so we have to get this point right. Please, please, please get this point right. We ask nor demand nothing. We ask or demand nothing. And no, ancestors did not die to vote. No, our ancestors did not die to vote. Our ancestors died to get something for their vote. Our ancestors died to get something for their vote. Our ancestors died to get something for their vote. But we don't just vote to vote blindly, because that's just like peeing in the wind. So we have to be intentional and precise and hold people accountable. We must regain the word recall. And recall is the only way to make politicians accountable. There is no accountability for no politician, and we blindly vote, and that's not for a damn thing. And that's only one group that does that. That's the descendants of enslaved Africans, the African American, the Native Black, what you want to call us. We are the only ones that just throw our votes and piss our votes to the wind. The Hispanic group, the Arab group, Chinese group, every group makes demands except us. Our stupid politicians, who are so ignorant from their mental health, they'll just say, well, I'm not going to ask for the black issues. I'm just going to help issues for everybody. But the Spanish say, hey, the Spanish say, I'm looking for the Latin American. The Chinese say, I'm looking for the Chinese. Japanese say, Japanese. Arab say, Arab. And the Asians say, Asians. But we're the only group that have been so mentally injured that we do not take care of our own. So being said next, remember that the police is the slave patrol. The slave patrol became what we call the police control, and what we have is mentally injured people who are black that are often used to allow these atrocities against our own people. The easiest way to address that issue is not defund the police, but remove qualified immunity. Remove qualified immunity. Remove qualified immunity so they have to justify their actions and so they'll be allowed to be prosecuted. Now, what you have to understand is that as a black, and these lawyers need to get on this, now, as a black, when you're killed, they have to try you for civil rights because you're not a human and fall under human rights because the Constitution has yet to be changed, removing you as being three-fifths human. So we are not as equal here in America. It says we the people did not include one black-skinned, melanated person, period. We the people does not include Negroes or niggers or black people or colored or second-class citizens. No, you were not included. We the people referred only to European Americans, period. And the Native Americans were considered savages, and you were considered property. So that did not relate to you. So you were classified as three-fifths human on the same level of a horse or a cow. And that's still the day, and that was reinforced by the Dred Scott decision that said that again, that you are not a citizen of the United States. So the lawyers are not standing up. So that way, removing the qualified immunity. Dr. Moncrief made an excellent thing, and I'm going to try to push this as legislation, that from now on, if it's a diagnosis or a thought of mental health, that they have to be admitted to a mental health facility. I had the patient with mental health and the ER that I sent there to be admitted. They discharged him several times, and when he swung on a nurse, then they went and jailed him for him to get his medication and mental health. So I think I'm going to try to push the Medical Society, Wayne County, and Michigan State, that we could push through the AMA legislation that mental health does not be arrested but sent to a mental health facility or a hospital, because remember that Republican governor shut down the mental health and said for the blacks particularly to get their mental health through the prison system, jail system. And he actually said that, and his name escaped me. So the final thing is that we have to work on the hardest thing that we can ever do in our lives, and that is to become three things. One, unapologetically black, that we love and accept the skin that God put us in, and two, that we become unapologetically African, because we have a continent, we have a history, we have a land base. We were not created during, in a test tube during slavery. So we have to become unapologetically African. And next, we need to break off the shackles of our mental illness and become unapologetically black. We need to discard our mental illness and become unapologetically black. We have been conditioned over 300 years not to support black people, not to respect black people, not to love black people, and not even now since the 60s, in the 70s, not to even love the black family, not to love the black man, not to love the black woman. So we have been conditioned mentally, subconsciously, socialized to do that. And we have to look at these issues to become whole. We are a fractured people. We are a fractured people, and we tolerate black people who hurt us and harm us instead of removing them. Tell you this, it's easier to organize and unionize against another race than your own race. If we have Uncle Tom, House Negroes, Stevens, or Snowballs, we need to get rid of them so that way the community will see that it's us against this race, it's us against this group, and instead of them trying to choose sides between House Negro, Field Negro, we just all need to be the grassroots Negroes. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Chimes. Marshawn, please, and then Dr. Marshawn.
Yes, as we close, you know, you look at the academy, and we look at the black academy for black officers going to academy. We need to set a program up, deliberately set in place, to make sure when these academy go in, we have funding for them to make sure that they can go to school on time, that they can pay their bills, that they can do whatever they need to take care of their family while they're in the academy. We need to send 25, each of these academies, each of these units, each of the police where we are heavily populated at, so we can make sure we start to populate them when they're in a in these academies, we follow them the whole year. And if they don't get hired, we need to press why he didn't get hired. He passed all the tests. He did this. Why is this guy not hired? We need to be in their face and on their face every season with 25 black men applying for every LAPD, sheriff's department, and our communities, and doing it consistently, to where that point at the same time is now we have the money. Because, you know, sometimes they go in there and it's like, well, you know, I got to pay my bills. I'm going to the academy. That you don't get paid sometimes for that enough to take care of those things. Well, we'll support that. So we need to create a secondary support base for our Black Police Academy and start sending as many men as we can so we can start making this different transition as we get in and set up in place.
I like that. Thank you.
For men and women. I'm done. I digress. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That was great. Dr. Long, thank you for bringing this tonight, and thank you for bringing Attorney Courtney and the other attorneys who are on. I certainly appreciate you. So if you will wrap it up, Dr. Long. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Lee, always for this venue and this vehicle to express and, you know, express ideas amongst everyone and to bring some insight. You know, police, mental health, health, racism, you know, it's like a giant jar of worms, crabs, et cetera. You know, and knowing that, you know, we have to go back to our basics, similar to what Dr. Tynes and everyone else has kind of advocated in terms of what we're going to do about our health, our mental health, our educational health. And it's, you know, the main thing in terms of different people in our community that I engage in, from infants all the way to the elderly, you know, one thing that we really have to focus on is our ability to decipher complex literature, decipher all the things that are on the internet that's being thrown against us. So we have to go back to the fundamentals of just reading. It's just appalling how many
you know, how many of our children don't know just some of the basic skills of reading? Okay, we already know why that's like that. So, again, what are we going to do about it? You know, to heal us, we have to start at home. It sounds like an easy task, but it's not, because, you know, we're all a victim of this institutionalized entity called racism, and it's just so many pillars. You know, it doesn't matter if, you know, you have an alphabet behind your name, you can still be lost in terms of what it means to aid our community. But I think with this show, Dr. Lee, and all the shows you've had, if we can get more listeners on board to engage in the conversation, we'll be better off. Yeah, there were a lot of attorneys that I suggested to partake in the discussion. I know a lot of them are dealing with different cases, but they did assure to me that if they can't participate tonight, they welcome the opportunity in the future, particularly those who are, you know, right on the ground in terms of dealing with, in some cases, defending these officers. So I think it would be great to get all the different perspectives in terms of when attorneys take an oath to defend their clients. You know, I'm always interested if, I know you have to defend this client, but how do you look at it if you're a black attorney and you're looking at this situation like this woman? So if we can get individuals on the phone and on this call, I think that would be even more enlightening, and just to see where we are with solutions. But overall, I think it was a great show, and look forward to next week.
Absolutely. So very much. I appreciate you all. And, yes, this was a great show, and I agree with the solutions, and we want to work on them, and we'll work on them together. Again, I thank you. I thank all of our listening audience. I want you to stay safe until next week. God bless you all. Until next week, this is Dr. Mary Lee saying good night, and I love you all. Thank you.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob us, slang. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Couple of quirks, can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gonna get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America? I done gave you all that I own, America. Took me from my mama so young, America. Locked me up and gave me your name.
When you steady being forced to climb.
time. The shit'll have your back, have you beat and lost your mind. Especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime.